TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Actually, it's kind of it's a trouble time, which means it is Zolgad and Star Tribune sports columnist Chip Scoggins, who joins me each and every Thursday to talk about what's going on. And Chipper, we spent the past couple weeks, I think, talking a lot of Vikings, talking some Gopher football, which we can certainly get to today. But we did not talk too much about the Twins, so I guess we should start there. Your thoughts, observations on the Twins now having lost, it's hard to even fathom this, 18 consecutive playoff games and being swept at home by a Houston Astros team that had won 9 games on the road all season, and furthermore, was the only American League playoff participant with a losing record.
Didn't we? I think we talked last week, Judd, about we ranked the teams that we thought would be the most attractive for the Twins to play, and I think we both said Houston by far, number one.
Sure.
Can we amend that? Is there
no?
Bad
they were.
Who else should we put first?
No, they were. We were right.
It's unbelievable. I mean, this is, as I wrote, it's an epic failure for many different reasons. But when you're at home playing a team, and I thought, I can't remember if it was Carl Ravitch or whoever the announcer was, made the point in game one that the Astros looked like they just wanted to go home. Like they didn't want to be there. They're ready for the season to be done. It was like they're carrying the weight of the world. Their body language was so bad.
Yes.
I mean, it reeked of, let's just get 2 games over with and be done with this season. And they still couldn't beat them. It was unbelievable. I mean, you look at that lineup, and they had a graphic at one point, Judd, where they showed their 2017 batting averages versus now, and just the plummet when they're not cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of those guys, it was like 60 points off what they were hitting that year. And so this was just a disaster for them. I mean, organizationally, it's just, you know, this was the worst possible outcome. I think the way they played, the way they did it, just it's a nightmare for them.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start, because I agree. I think the Astros, with, you know, Altuve being basically a shell of his former self, right, and Bregman, mm-hmm. I think they honestly showed up with, like, all right, knockout punch. Let's take it. Let's go home. And the Twins are like, oh, no, you don't get it. When we get to the playoffs, we all lose our minds. And here's my starting point of disappointment, Chip. It's not a player.
No.
It's Rocco. What the hell happens? And look, this I'm sure also is shared responsibility with Falvey, Levine, and the brain trust as well. But what happens to him where he lacks the chip, no pun intended, to actually process that playoff baseball different than regular season? And the lifting of Barrios and Kenta well. Help me understand.
Well, I was more annoyed with the Barrios one than Maeda. Now, Maeda, he battled, right?
Yes.
Now, you could say, he went straight from Kenta to Trevor May, right, in game one?
Yes, sir.
And May was just mowing him down. Why wouldn't you go back to May for another inning?
11 pitches, just, I believe, Chip. 11 pitches.
If a guy is having that kind of success, I'm not a ball guy. I don't, you know, I'm not one of these analytics and deep dive, but If I watch a guy just completely mow down a lineup, 3 batters, right, 11 pitches?
Yeah, 11 pitches.
I think I might say, you know what, I'm going to ride this and see how far this can go versus, nope, this is playing. We're going to analytics tell us we got to switch right here. It's like, do you not have any in-game gut? Like, do you have to go by the numbers on everything? And the same thing with Barrios is like, Judd, now I know he walked the 2 guys and that led to a run, which was kind of a weak run, but
yes.
Haven't we been pining to see that Barrios for years? Like that bulldog kind of, had that look yesterday.
Yes.
Like when he screamed, let's go, and he was into it, and he was, I don't want to say cruising, but he felt like he was in total command there. And then at 75 pitches, you're going to switch. It's like, that's what we wanted to see from Barrios, like that rise to the moment. And they did, and they short-circuited. I don't understand that philosophy at all.
So the Barrios one, I absolutely love, and I get that this team could not hit, okay? And that's the starting point. They had, I believe, 7 hits and 59 official at-bats. They scored 2 runs, so I understand it. But I think as far as the breakdown of Rocco making decisions that I think were short-term and long-term counterproductive, the Berríos one to me is a great topic because you're exactly right. How long since Berríos arrived have the Twins, his teammates, the players, the brain trust, the fan base, the media, been begging him, go out there and shove. Like, go into an elimination game and you show us. And Jose Berríos, for 5 innings and 75 pitches, which is nothing, basically did exactly that. And Rocco then, going by the book of the third time that Berríos goes through the order, starts to struggle, takes him out. Now, here's the long-term impact of that move that I think is real, too. When ESPN's cameras showed Berríos' reaction and him looking absolutely somewhere between pissed off and crestfallen by this move, if you're him, you got to be thinking to yourself, so this is what you wanted. I did it. And now because your book in a playoff game, because your book tells you that you should treat me the same in June, July, or basically October, you're going to do that. If I'm Berríos, I am beyond ticked off. I am absolutely. I did everything you asked me to do in a game where you've been begging me to do it, and you went by the book.
Yeah, and the thing is we know Jose, and he's going to, he played the, company line and good soldier yesterday. But I bet when he sits back and reflects on it here in the coming days and weeks, he is going to be more angry. And I wouldn't be surprised if whether it's Rocco or Falvey at some point, this offseason, because they check on guys constantly during the winter, that they say, we screwed that up. We apologize that we should have trusted you more. And this whole third time through the order thing has become way out of because it doesn't allow for in-game gut feeling, does it? No. I mean, it's – don't you have to say, I know the numbers say that – or they start to figure them out or whatever, and the numbers go up. But can't you just get a feel for watching the game? Like, that was a different Berríos than we've seen in postseason appearances, and he just looked like, pardon the expression, he was ready to kick some ass yesterday. And and he was doing it, and he was throwing it, and we saw that emotion. And, yeah, I think he was more crestfallen. When you saw his face, it was just like he wanted to go. And, like, at that point, you wonder if Rocco Jen said, you know what, I'm sticking with you. You know what? They want me to switch. I'm sticking with you. I'm trusting you. Go prove me right. But there's just no allowance for that, Judd. And so I do think as time goes on, he's going to be more annoyed with it.
Yes, he should be.
And I think they probably will at some point apologize. I hope they do because they made the wrong
decision. And for Cody Stasiak? I mean, for Cody Stasiak, it'd be different if you said, I have Aroldis Chapman in my bullpen and you're coming out. Okay, I might not like it, but I get it. But Cody Stasiak, and what I don't get, Chip, is that would have been the moment, I think, to say, okay, here's the deal. You're right. We're sending you back out. Now, your leash might not be incredibly long, and if he starts to struggle, yank him. But, like, there's no baseball rule about starters that if they go out to start an inning, they have to stay in. And, again, you did that for 2 innings of Cody Stasiak, who, by the way, on the Carlos Correa home run, gave up the go-ahead run. So it did cost you. It made no sense. And, yeah, an apology, but more so, Chipper, 5 playoff games for Rocco, who I think we all consider to be a thoughtful, smart guy. Here's my question to you. What has he learned? Like, this is the learning experience. Forget Berríos. I need the manager to learn.
Well, he has other things like, and I'm not going to pin Buxton getting picked off on Rocco, but it's like, why would you put him on there and not steal? If you're saying, well, he didn't feel right, well, then why is he doing out there in the first place?
Yeah.
It's like if you're going to play him, play him. And, you don't have him run there, and then he winds up getting picked off, and that was on him, not the manager. But, it's bizarre to me how a lot of times he uses his bullpen where if a guy has a quick inning, he's still coming out. I don't get that.
Yeah.
If he has a quick inning, that tells me he's dominant today. So I'm going to ride it. And instead of, okay, we have this plan. You're doing 6th, you're doing 7th, you're doing 8th, you're doing 9th. And it's like, just have a little in-game flexibility once in a while, you know?
Right, and do it. And look, I get it. June, July, May,
sure.
August. I understand it. It's by the book. It ordinarily, not this year, is a long 162-game season. I understand all of those things. But you've got to show some progress when you start to manage in playoff games. And that's where I'm growing more and more afraid that the Twins, that the key decision makers for the Twins aren't making progress. Forget the players.
And but that, yes, 100%. But there's something inherently wrong, Judd, about the way this team plays in the postseason. I don't know if they can tell us they don't, you know, pay attention because they weren't on the team with all those losing streaks. But, yep, like, you look at Polanco, just the casual nature of that flip the second that basically lost the game, let's be honest. Like, you'd be angry if that happened in June in a throwaway game in Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm. Just kind of a casual flip over there. But in a playoff game, it's like, man, there needs to be more urgency. And urgency in baseball is hard to, you know, quantify, but it's like, I didn't see any of those two games. Did you? I mean, I just didn't see a whole lot
of uptight
productive at-bats. I think they're just, and we could get into this too, that the Bomba Squad is fun and we had a great time with that and everything, but they've got to figure out how to score other than just feast or famine. And that's,
yes,
what it's become. And when it dries up, it dries up. And this is what you get, two runs in two games, you know?
Exactly right. Exactly right. Well, I will say this, especially at the plate, to a certain degree in the field, but at the plate, what I saw was a very uptight team that is incredibly aware of the fact that it might not be their streak completely, but it's partially their streak now that looked like they were pressing. And look, I think that Rocco's way of dumbing it down and trying to ignore it is actually a mistake. I think until the Twins acknowledge what the streak is, acknowledge that it's now their streak. I mean, they've lost, mm-hmm, five consecutive games. Yeah. This is your streak. Well, I think until you acknowledge that, you are doing your team a disservice because you're ignoring the fact that basically your house is on fire.
And here's the thing, Judd. Most of these guys didn't create it, but they're carrying it.
Yes.
In some ways, that's even worse,
yes,
or harder.
Yes.
You know, because the other guys, they didn't hear about it a lot, you know, early on. And now these guys hear about it and they're carrying that streak. And so you can't tell me that there's not some inherent pressure that comes with that. Absolutely is. And you're right. They just look like the at-bats were horrible that they were taking. And let's be honest, it wasn't like they were facing great pitching.
No. I mean,
this was not Garrett Cole or Scherzer or Verlander or these are not front-line guys they were facing. They were facing, you know, pretty good pitchers, obviously, but not, you know, true aces. And so, but just the at-bats they took were horrendous. And that's why I wonder, one, is, you know, pressure was getting to them, but two, do they have to, you hate to say rethink the way they do it because they're built on home runs, but they got to be able to score other ways than just try to get a three-run homer because, you know, I mean, how many pop-ups did they hit or fly balls to the outfield yesterday? I mean, it felt like every inning, two of the outs were just lazy, easy fly balls that didn't go very far.
Yep. So as far as your thoughts on strategy, who do you think is back? Who do you think is gone? And what's your first step if you are the Twins and trying to because your team is good, in trying to change things, though, because at some point in time, it might not be fair, but I can't blame them. Fans get real tired of, we made the playoffs again, but we got bounced. And you know what? In 2013, we would have given anything for this team to make the playoffs, but we quickly forget about that and say, do something in the playoffs this time.
Well, that's the thing. Do you think anybody feels fans feel satisfied right now making playoffs?
Nor should they.
Well, my guess is Rosario's gone. I think at some point, you know, we saw it yesterday. You got to bring these young guys up, and I'm guessing Kirilloff has one spot out there. So I think Rosario's gone. And without knowing all their, you know, the contracts, you know, I mean, you just signed Sano to a deal for, what, 4 years? So he's back, but he's got to.
And he's going to get you nothing right now.
He would get you nothing. That
Zero.
Was an atrocious season by him.
I mean,
the strikeouts, it was just abysmal.
Oh.
And so I assume he's back, you know, because he's not tradable right now for anything that you'd want. going around pitching staff. I don't think Odorizzi's probably back, right?
Not unless he comes back super cheap, which he might have to.
He might have to. It's a big gamble that unfortunately, the pandemic, he couldn't foresee that. Of the everyday players, probably just Rosario now, right? I mean,
I'd be tempted to shop Kepler, but I don't know that they will because they have corner guys coming up, and Kepler is an enigma as far as I'm concerned.
And what's his value to Judd? I mean,
his contract is really good though, as far as being team friendly. So I think that you could try to trade him, but the contract might be so team friendly that the Twins actually don't want to give it up.
Sure. Yeah. So, but I mean, I'm obviously Kirilov's going to be in the lineup next year.
Yep.
Garver, he doesn't really have a massive contract, right?
No, but he's also coming off an unbelievably disappointing year.
It'll be interesting to see. I assume he gets, they hope for a bounce back from him, but there's not a whole lot of I definitely would bring Cruz back. I mean, that's an easy one. Even what he'll be 41, but that's an obvious one. He was their best player. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that there's a whole lot of change we're going to see. Do you? I mean, you got to hope that Donaldson's calf issue you can figure that out.
You
can't say it's a one-time thing because it's not. I mean, it's a lingering deal.
That one scares me a ton. I think this
was a wasted year, Judd. It was a wasted year for him.
And Chip, I think that there's a chance that Cruz, because it looks like the DH might be adopted in the National League. I think there's a chance that Cruz is going to have a whole group of potential suitors that he didn't have. And here's my fear with Donaldson. Do you have to have a serious discussion about DHing him more? Because I think that he got hurt. That calf pops at third base.
Yeah, Judd, but part of the reason he signed him was for his defense and how much he was going to help. I mean, look at the plays that Marwin didn't make over there. There was probably, in a series, or if you want to call it a series, two games, there was probably at least two plays that Donaldson makes that he didn't make, right?
Right, but Donaldson has to play. And if that calf is going to pop and I can't play him, I am now literally flushing the contract that I gave him down the toilet.
Yeah, that's true. I think their first thing is to go through an off season and figure out his recovery process and strength training process and whatever, and try to figure out if it's avoidable. But it's alarming the fact that how many games did he play? I hadn't looked at.
He missed 30 the first time around.
He basically played half the season. Yeah. And then really struggled. When he came back at times just to find his. And he wasn't available to you in the playoffs. So, yeah, it's a problem. Are you ready to – God, though. I mean, would you want to give up Nelson Cruz just because you can't trust his Donaldson's calf?
I might have to if I can't pay him because of the fact that they're almost certainly going to have to cut payroll. That's their issue.
Well, that's true because you don't know, where everybody's payroll is going to be because of this year of the lost revenue. But they're billionaire owners, Judd. I mean, hopefully it doesn't go back too far. But, man, that would not go over well if you say we can't pay Nelson Cruz when you think about he was your best player and he's your most important leader in the clubhouse. And to say you're going to get rid of him because you can't afford him, how do you think that's going to go over with a fan base?
Not well.
I think I would really focus on trying to get Donaldson's calf in order. But other than that, I mean, where do you really see changes at? I mean, pitching staff, you're pretty, I don't see a whole lot of changes there, do you? Was Pineda a one-year deal?
No, 2 years.
So you got him back, you got Barrios back, you got Maeda back.
And Jake possibly, if he comes back at your price.
Yeah, so cheap one-year contract. Okay there, and, you feel good about that, I don't know about the bullpen, but as far as position players, I think Rosario is the only one I'd sit here and say for sure I think is gone.
To answer your question, Josh Donaldson played in 28 games. I want to wrap up the Twins portion of this, Chipper. This is off the charts. This was Miguel Sano's September, okay? His slash line. 148 average, 179, 383, 6 home runs, 10 runs driven in 21 games just in September pre-playoffs, and he struck out 39 times in 81 at-bats.
In year what, Judd, for him?
2015 was his first year here.
So you're talking about 5 years?
Five, 6 years, yeah. Yep.
this is who he is.
Yep.
I mean, he's not going to change as a hitter. I mean, this is not like this is his first year. It's not his third year. This was his fifth or sixth year. This is who he is. I mean, he's not going to reinvent himself. He's not going to become a high on base, and, you know, he's going to strike out a lot. He's the, I don't know if you call it the prototypical power hitter now, because those strikeouts numbers are just alarming. And you know, in September, towards the end of the year, he just looked like it was an automatic out when he went up there. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, I think you're just going to have to live with the strikeouts and hope somebody, you know, the occasional bad pitch that he hits 420 feet. I mean, what are the options at this point?
I don't know. I don't know, because it feels like they have gone to the well of trying to work with him and get him to have an approach or to lose weight 1,000 times now. And it can pay off short term, but it's almost as if, Chip, he can never stay with the program. And really, starting September 1st, I mean, his at-bats were unplayable. It was embarrassing. It's, you know, it's one thing to not look great, but you hit for power and okay. It's another to look as lost as he looked, and really at times embarrass yourself. And your approach, which you had one at one time, is completely gone.
Well, and that's the thing, and we've seen he'll have stretches where he absolutely gets on a tear and just carries him. You're like, man, this is exactly what, you know, you live with the strikeouts because he's hitting, you know, 7 home runs in a week and he's on fire. But then you're right, when he loses his way, it's just gone, and
yep.
it's hard for him to make the in-game corrections or day-to-day corrections. That just kind of, he gets in this rut that he can't get out of, and so do you see it changing, honestly?
No.
I would be surprised if it does, because I just don't know. There's no evidence of him being able to do that. And you've tied yourself to him with that contract, and so I don't know that he'd have much value on the trade market.
I think Chipper,
sort of stuck with it.
If we do see a change, I think it's inevitably going to regress to where it is right now. I think the only answer would be to keep him, hope he gets hot, and shop him off of that, which people would go nuts about. But I do think now you always know he's going to go back to being who he was. So that's my only answer.
To finish up with this too, and the guy that's always associated with him, Buxton. And I thought Derek Falvey said today that they asked about Buxton. He said he just showed up the park and didn't feel great.
Yeah.
So we just think that the sliding in the second on that steal aggravated his concussion symptoms, or is there a theory?
Oh, I think the concussions, I think that, so Buxton said a while back, I think it might have been after he suffered the one against Cleveland diving headfirst last July, so July 2019, Chip, he said that his concussion history went back to his high school football days. Well, if that's true, and let's say he suffered two then, the one that he suffered in his first game at Double-A, where he collided with Kwasnicka, was brutal. Like he was basically out cold for a long period of time and taken off. So that's concussion, let's say, 3 or 4, all right? Then the one in Cleveland. I think the problem is, you know, and we learned this with Maurer, Morneau, lots of guys. There's no such thing as a person who has suffered numerous concussions having minor concussion symptoms, because
no.
You don't know if what might be a slight headache on Saturday will be awful by Sunday.
No, you don't reset to zero, right? There's always going to be, and you wonder, because he got the single in game one and then stole, right?
Yes.
And who knows what triggers it, you know?
Yeah.
It could be anything. And so, you know, now that's a concern.
Yeah.
Along on top of his, you know, obviously his health injury or history that he's had, but that there was nothing really that jumped out in game one that you're like, okay, that, you know, we see what happened that caused him to have a, you know, some issues, you know, some symptoms flare back up. It's just he showed up and he didn't feel great. And so you're right. When a guy has had that kind of concussion history, these symptoms can occur at any moment, right? And so, you know, add that to the list of concerns going into the offseason and next year.
Absolutely true. Do the Vikings break through with victory number one on Sunday against the Texans in Houston?
No. I agree with
you, by the way.
I don't think they do. And I don't really think it has much to do with lost practice time. I'm not going to overreact to missing one day of practice. I think they can get all their work in, and really how much is going to change week to week and what you do, you know. Now, if they weren't able to practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I might think differently. But, you know, if you're just missing one day of practice, I'm not sure it's, you know, the end of the world in terms of preparation. But I just don't think they're good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, you could say, yeah, the Texans are 0-3. Well, they played the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Steelers. You know, I mean, not exactly. I don't know who they made angry at the NFL office to give them that schedule right off the bat. But I just think Deshaun Watson and what he can do, both with his arms and then keeping plays alive with a defense that is not good, has people that should, you know, young guys that are forced to play and then backups that shouldn't be playing because of injuries. I think it's, they're going to have a hard time controlling that offense.
Yeah. And I think, Chip, it comes down to me to one thing, the quarterback, because mm-hmm. if you decide to take the passing away, he's going to run, and I don't think ultimately over four quarters of football that your run defense can stop him. And if you decide to take the run, he's going to pass. And so I just don't see, this Vikings defense is either A, not good, or B, not experienced enough to be good in key areas. So going against a quarterback like Watson, who I get has not been great so far, I just think is extremely difficult, because you can pick your poison, that's fine, but I think he's just going to use the poison you don't pick to get you.
Yeah, and you know what's weird? We were watching the game last week, and I'm like, you know, this defense is actually playing pretty good. You know, Derrick Henry wasn't going crazy, and I thought Tannehill looked like young Tannehill.
He didn't look good to me.
No, I didn't think he looked good at all.
I agree.
But then all of a sudden, bam, 61-yard, you know, they have one bust, and it's a 61-yard play, and then they get a touchdown. And then another, I think it's like a 40-yard catch by Davis. And then it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, man, they've given up two big plays, and it's two touchdowns, and now they don't look so good. I think it's going to be hard for that defense to play 60 minutes of really good football, or the kind of football where you're like, you just shut down an offense. I just don't know that they're capable of it right now, and it's, for the, you know, like you said, they're either too young or not good enough in spots. And so until, you know, Zimmer and Spillman both said yesterday that they see signs of progress, but it's like, from what, you know, I mean, it's
right.
It's, you know, there's just a lot of problems with that on that side of the ball right now.
Yeah. Now I did enjoy Sunday's Titans game, Chip, based on this. I thought the Packers game and Colts games were just a mess. Like, they were just a complete mess. They mm-hmm. were cringe worthy as far as how they played out. I thought the Titans game was fun to watch. I thought the Titans game showed that key players who are not great yet are getting experience. I think that you can separate guys too. Like, I'm beginning to think Holton Hill might not be good. I think Gladney's going to be fine. Now, he's going to get burned, but I think he ultimately is going to be fine. But I think if you can, in January, take a step back and look at the Vikings schedule and say, you know what, they won four games, but there were a lot of games in which, to clear that there was absolutely key for 2021 development going on, that's a positive. I felt that Sunday's game against the Titans was the first game where I walked away saying, yeah, they lost, but I saw things that are going to be necessary for eventual improvement.
Well, yeah, because Jefferson, I mean, he was
on another one. Yeah, that's another one.
I mean, just you saw that, man, this guy's really good. You know, he looked like a star out there. Against better, you know, he's going to get Malcolm Butler and Joseph, and he's going to get some pretty good cornerbacks. And just he looks the part. And so you're like, okay, but to go along that line, Judd, it's like it's forcing you to look at it differently than what we were sold, right? What were we sold? Oh, no, we're retooling on fly. We see this as a playoff team. We're not going to take a step back and all this. And now it's like, all right, this seems terrible. Just rebuilding whatever, you know, anything they show us is going to be a positive. It's like, oh, wait a second. That's not the way this was sold initially. This was retooling on the fly, and you're not going to take a step back, and you know, you have these veteran guys and Cousins and Harrison Smith and Danielle Hunter, and this is not a rebuild, and don't look at it that way. So it's funny, like, how the narrative has changed in 3 weeks, you know?
Now, here's my thing, though, all right? So the reason why I'm not really upset about this whole thing is this. Because on first guess, when they said, oh, it's going to be fine, I said, you sure you don't want a veteran corner? And they said, no, we're fine. And so, I mean, this is the kid who you tell not to touch the stove, mm-hmm. and then they do, and they get burned. And you don't like the fact that your kid got burned, but you also have to say, hold on a second, Junior. I told you if you didn't do this, that, yeah. or if you, in this case, did it, this was going to be the result. So it's not, it's everything that they did. And heck, I mean, we talked about this on this show. Everything that they did or didn't do, we were always sort of like, well, hold on a second.
Yeah.
And now it's coming to bite them firmly in the ass. And so it's not this, oh my God, I thought your corners were so good, and they're not.
Yeah.
It's literally, we told you if you were going to be competitive in 2020, you had to at least go sign a veteran corner. And they were the ones who were like, oh no, no, it's going to be fine. So it's almost like Chip and Judd and the fan base are the adults in the room, and Zimmer Spielman are the little kids.
Well, what did we do when they traded, when they traded Stephon Diggs? And it's like, no, we're gonna be fine. I mean, you know, Justin,
yeah.
you know, we
yeah,
can just
no.
plug in the BC Johnson. It's like, wait, like everything they did, like that part, like when you trade your best player, your best offensive guy, you're thinking, okay, is this a rebuild? This, you know, are you starting over here? You just don't, a team that, remember, Judd, they were Final Four in the NFC last year, and you know, you get rid of your best offensive weapon, or one of them, or two best, him or Dalvin, your best receiver.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't reek of a team that's in all in mode, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, if you were looking at it like realistically, you're like, okay, this team's transitioning or rebuild or however you want to, you know, phrase it. But you can't make the number of personnel changes they did and think that you're just not going to experience. And then on top of it, you know, the pandemic and not having an off season that,
absolutely,
it's not going to set you back. But I do agree that you're seeing things. I agree with Gladney and I agree with Holton Hill. I just don't think he's been very good at all the first 3 weeks. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if they get healthy, if his playing time diminishes. I mean, right now it can't because they don't have any other corners, but, if he was playing this way under a normal situation, I'm sure he would be on the sideline more than he is.
Give me your thoughts on the ever expanding, not the right word, the ever evolving potential relationship between Zim and Cousins too. Because I thought the whole exchange in the Zoom post-game press conferences was very intriguing. And
yeah.
here's my question: and I'm not going to place blame here. Are either one of these two gentlemen prepared for what they are going through and or facing?
Well, what have we talked about? I'm going to write more about this on Sunday, just about Zim and his level of patience, right? I mean, it's just he was going to have to show a level of patience this year that, you know, it's just kind of out of character because of all the stuff that's out of his control, and he's seen it this week. But it was interesting. Would you say I think Cousins was both surprised and annoyed by the chaos comment, right?
Yes. Yes, clearly.
And so, and I wonder if he said anything or somebody said anything, because the next day on Monday, Zimmer said, well, I'd say it's more, disaster than chaos.
Yes.
Which I'm not sure that's really any better, but it clearly, it felt like they were taking jabs at each other because Cousins was asked a different question about the offense. He's like, well, you scored 30 points and almost 500 yards. You're doing something right. And that almost felt like, no, he was saying, no, wait a second. You know, the defense did give up 31 points here. You know, the offense did some good things. So you wonder if there's not, I don't know if it's friction or if it was just more than anything, Judd, I think everybody's frustrated and exasperated. I mean, there's no way, even all the stuff we talked about with personnel losses and no off season, there's no way Zim thought his team would look like this for three games, right? I mean, he looked after the Indy game just like he was completely out of answers and just exasperated by how his team was playing. Now, they played better Sunday, but that two-minute drill was just a disaster. It was.
I mean, and chaos, too, Chip.
And chaos.
It was chaos. It was complete chaos.
Like they never practiced it, Judd.
I know.
It was unbelievable.
Well, Chip, they're on the – so with the penalty called the Cousins drew, they're on their own 40, right? So
yeah.
They need a field goal. They do not need to score a touchdown. And there is, I believe, 1:33 on the clock.
Yes.
That is the type of drive that if you are not a chaotic offense, and if you have the right QB, that's the type of drive that we up in the press box are thinking, okay, you're going to have to move slowly enough to not give Tannehill the ball back because you are going to get a field goal. You are going to score. It's inevitable. And Chip, they got the ball, and I swear to God, I never thought to myself for one second, they're going to score points.
No. Well, it's you know, I would never say that's a layup, but how many times in NFL, if you give the average NFL team that circumstance, even though they didn't have timeouts, but it's like you only needed probably, what, 30 yards, 25 yards to kick a field goal? It's like, how often does that happen? We've seen that all the time, right, where they just convert. They go down there and kick the field goal and win it. But when it was funny, like after the Hail Mary gets intercepted, it happened so fast. That whole drive, that whole possession lasted 46 seconds.
Yeah.
I remember looking down, I was like, what the hell just happened? like literally, I couldn't, because it went so bang, bang, you know, they're going hurry. And then it's like, man, what in the world literally just happened on that? You know, and I went back and watched it. It's like, I couldn't believe how, chaotic it felt. Just like, you know, like
well,
they had no chance.
The offensive line is a mess. The interior of that line is, for the most part, just a complete mess, too.
Yes, and it's what it was. And I know Cousins deserves his share of blame, but, I mean, they were all over him. I'm not sure that, you know, and he's not, you know, obviously we know what happens when he gets pressure, and it was just a disaster. I mean, the play calling, the you know, everything, the blocking, everything about it was just.
Well, explain this to me, Chip. So Jefferson has this breakout game. I mean, a Randy Moss, welcome to the National Football League. Oh, my gosh, you are really good, okay? Explain this to me. Second half, two targets, one was picked. One, by the way, went for a 71-yard touchdown to Jefferson. Mm-hmm. Zero targets in the fourth quarter, including that last play, which is all about if you're going to throw that pass, which, by the way, was a pass thrown as if there was 2 seconds left, not substantial time. That pass has to go to the guy having a huge game who is going to, look, Thielen is fantastic and does what he does well, okay? Mm-hmm. But with the game that Jefferson is having, if I had just come to you in the press box and been like, where's this ball going and it's going to be a tough play?
Yeah.
I think you would have said, the guy who clearly can make the play here, Justin
who's
Jefferson.
Dominating, yeah. Well, when he has that kind of first half, I think I would just force feed it to him because they couldn't cover him.
No.
He was on a different level in that game. And so, it was – well, and you know, Mark Craig, my colleague, wrote about it late in that third quarter after the Titans had scored the first touchdown. The Vikings had the ball, and, like, it was Madison's turn. So, Dalvin, you're out this series. It's like I understand you have a rotation, but it's like, man, I think I would just leave my best players. And, you know, in that situation where you feel like it's evaporating before your eyes, get it to Dalvin and Jefferson in those situations, you know.
Yes. And that was maddening to watch because that's, I guess, on Gary. Kirk, maybe a little bit in the case of Jefferson, but Gary, look, I'm the guy who sat here all last year and said Stefanski's doing a really nice job, but he is running Gary's offense and Gary is the brains and I'm the one who sang Gary's praises up and down. And I do think that the fundamentals of his offense worked really well for Kirk last season. But that being said, I am shocked at some of the play calls, and I guess I owe an apology to Stefanski because he must have been doing things, at least from a calling standpoint, different than what Gary has done.
Yeah, and I do, you know, the first 2 weeks, I don't even know what to make of that because everything was, you know, atrocious. But there were things I liked Sunday. I mean, especially that first half when it was like, Dalvin Jefferson. It's like they got in a rhythm, you know. I mean, it seemed like they were going hand in hand.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, this thing totally makes sense now. You know, you get your running back involved, your star running back. He's making big plays. You got the prized rookie. You're throwing it to him short. Cousins completed 10 straight passes at one point because it was in rhythm and you're getting the ball out. So, I mean, that made sense. And here's the thing. This, you know, another thing I write and judge is like they're going to have to win shootouts. I mean, model of Zim's, you know, dream of 13-10 victories, that ain't happening. You know, so they're going to have to continue to try to squeeze as much out of this offense as you can.
Agreed completely. And I just don't think that – I don't think Kirk's built for that, and I note that the offensive line is not, and the play calling, at least through three games, has not been. Hey, Chip, last thing. The NCAA, one of the most mismanaged, worst-run group of bozos, finally did something right. Rashad Bateman, eligibility restored. He can play. Just as a sports fan in this town, to me, this is great news because watching that kid play is so much fun.
Yeah, I've said all along that in the years I've been here, him and Maroney are the two most electric and dynamic talents that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I wrote this column a couple weeks ago about this situation, and to me it was an easy decision, right? I mean, were you really going to dig in your heels on this?
No.
Because, and you know, people said, well, he decided before the Big Ten did, and he took money from his agent, Blake Barry. And so I was like, I don't care. It doesn't – that's irrelevant. That Kevin Warren and 14 university presidents changed their mind about whether they felt like it was safe enough. So you're going to tell me an athlete couldn't do that too? I mean, just if you look at it from that sense, that it makes total – you know, it would seem like it would be an easy decision. And to their credit, NCAA, you know, did the right thing. And, yeah, I mean, if you're P.J. Fleck and the Gophers, I mean, think about what kind of shot in the arm that is.
Tanner Morgan, I am a very happy man because this just helped me a ton.
Well,
draft-wise. You know,
throw the slant to Bateman. How many times do we see that go for a long game? So, yeah, I mean, they got a lot better yesterday or whatever day it was when it came out, and that offense is going to be good. I mean, yeah, you lose Tyler Johnson and Rodney Smith. Key guys have been around forever, but that offense has a lot of talent now that you get Bateman back.
Thanks, Chipper. Talk to you next week, okay?
All right, brother.
All right, take care. Chip Scoggins, Conduits of Trouble.